Welcome to the Business Speak Podcast, where we take everything you need to know about being successful in business and make it easy to understand. Whether you're a longtime business owner, newer to this entrepreneur stuff, or hoping to run your own company in the future, you've come to the right place. Featuring your host, professional accountant and business guru, Mr. Chill. So relax and have some fun with us as we journey through Business Speak, the language of business, simplified.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Business Speak podcast. My name is Corey Hill, also known as Mr. Chill, and I'm grateful to be able to host the podcast and be here with you today. It's kind of cool that I get like a moniker that I adopt when I host the show, Mr. Chill. But today, the guest we have kind of gives me a run for my money, and I'm excited. Garland Colson is here with us today. And I would say that a lot of our guests probably are like undercover superheroes, but Garland actually has a superhero name. And if you go to his website or you go to any of his seminars, he's going to also introduce himself at some point as Captain Time. I don't know if you have a cape or a costume that goes with that, but you can see he's got the most amazing hat. And I don't know if they can see it on the thing, but you've got your wrist thing too that you've had. So Captain Time, or Garland, as we'll call him for the majority of our podcast today. But as you can perhaps guess, Garland's specialty, based on his Captain Time name, is time management. Now, Garland, thank you for being with us.
You're
welcome. Excited to have you. When you introduce yourself to people, obviously you probably have some fun with your moniker of Captain Time, but when you try to describe what you are, like people try to put people in boxes, they would say, I'm an accountant. How do you describe yourself to people as far as like what you are, what you do?
Generally, I say I'm a time management trainer and coach. That's usually the way that I do it, or a productivity coach. So.
Okay. Are you okay? I've got a little bit of a bio I pulled from your website. Are you okay if I read a little bit of it?
Sure.
And then feel free to expand, because there's some cool things in here that might be neat to add to. So I already mentioned you've got your name as Captain Time. It says you've got over 25 years of experience doing this.
I'm mastering time management for me. When I first got into it, it was for me. I've been trying to master time management for 25 years. So.
Okay. It says here that you do workshops, online courses, personal coaching. And I know in conversations we've had, you've mentioned that you don't necessarily latch on to like all in one particular technique, but you've gotten used to a variety of techniques. And then when you meet with clients, like, okay, well, based on what I've seen or whatever, here's what may work well for you. Or let's try a few things and see what you end up liking. You're also an author. You've published at least one book, Stop Wasting Time and Procrastination in 5 Weeks with Proven Productivity Techniques. So I'm anxious to hear a little bit more about that. I highlighted here that you view time as a precious, non-renewable resource. And I know that people would probably know that, but I may not think we think about it like that. We've talked about things such as inbox zero and email management. And I know there's a variety of other amazing tools and ideas you have at your disposal. So again, thank you for being with us. Can you perhaps give our listeners a little bit of insight into, I mean, I don't know if anyone grows up, maybe they do, and said, when they're sitting there and they're in high school, 15, 16, 17 year olds, and the teacher's like, what do you want to do when you get old? And I'm like, I want to be a time guru. Maybe you did, I don't know. But how did that all come about?
So I was working in management in a bank at the time and, doing my work every day, working through normally. And I was reasonably productive, but I hadn't really paid any attention to any special time management techniques or anything. And for Christmas one year, my manager gave me a very lovely red leather-bound day timer with my initials on it. And my initial thought was, wow, what a lovely gift. And my second thought was, wait, is he insinuating I'm not organized? But I think it was really just a lovely gift. So I opened it up and started to assemble it, because some assembly required. And I was blown away at the level of thought that went into it. So it had one page per day. And on this page, it had not only a spot for my appointments, but my to-do list and my expenses. In the back were sections for goal setting, for client notes, for meeting notes. Blew me away. I'd never thought of organizing my work that way. I just kind of came in and did my work every day, like most people do. And I became obsessed. I wanted to learn more. So I started to take books out from the library, buy every time management book I could lay my hands on. I would listen to cassettes in the car on my commute to work because I'm that old. Cassettes were what we had back then. And I just wanted to learn all of this and mastering it for me. So it was never intended to be a business for me. And of course, because I was in management, anything I learned, I would teach my team, right? Yeah. Because it helps the whole team. And eventually it became what I do for a living. So,
and that was a gift from who?
From my manager in when I worked in the bank. So I was middle management and he was my manager, you know, so my supervisor in the bank. So.
All right. And does he know that that one act that he probably didn't think a lot of kind of changed the trajectory?
Possibly not. This is many years ago. I've long since lost touch with him. So I don't know. So.
Well, on the slim chance that maybe he happens to listen to this podcast, you want to give him a shout out?
I can't remember his name in all honesty. That's horrible. But it was so many years ago that, you know, and he was much older than me. He may have passed away by now. So.
Okay. Well, nice. Now, one of the things that I did is I went onto your website and looked at some of the things that people say about you. I was pretty impressed by some of these. I'm going to read little snippets of some of these things. So it's one thing to be able to come on and talk about something, but it's amazing when people you've helped in the past are so grateful and so have had such a perspective shift that they want to give you a shout out. They want to give you a referral or a testimonial. And so these are some of the things that stood out to me on what people have said about you that you've worked with. A gentleman named Dave says, "Wow, Garland really knows his stuff. He's extremely pleasant to work with and knowledgeable. There is no better combination and there is no better instructor on this topic. I highly recommend." So that was pretty cool. A lady named Lucy writes, "Garland, after having attended two of your informative, easy to understand, fun and thought-provoking e-business meetings, I come away inspired. Your easy manner, thorough knowledge, and confidence make you skillful critiques insightful. You are an excellent mentor and speaker." And I have to say, anyone's ever been to a meeting, let alone a business meeting, would probably not think of words like fun, easy to understand, informative. But I thought that was pretty amazing that you must have been able to work with her in such a way where that's how she felt. A lady named Diana says, "I've taken many courses, but few deliver the kind of content this one does. Step by step, easy to grasp, and loaded with lots of creative tips. This course gave me information that I knew I needed to know, but didn't know where to find it." So that was pretty amazing. And then one more, a lady named Annie said, "Garland has helped me transform and fall back in love with my business." She had more to say, but I thought that enough was amazing. Fall back in love with your business, fun, informative, thought-provoking, lots of information you know you needed but didn't know where to find. That's got to feel pretty good.
It does. And really, this is one of the reasons I do this, for those changes that are made. It's a real amazing when you get up in front of a group and you're teaching and you see the heads nodding or people are going, yes, or oh, and one person went, like blew his head you know, at one point when I said something, he was like, he just went like this, you know. And yeah, it's just really great to get that kind of feedback from people and to hear how much I transformed their workday, their business, their life.
And I mean, you do what you do to make a living, but I imagine these kind of things are way more rewarding than any kind of cash flow that might come out of this.
Yeah, I taught workshops at a summit last week and I was buzzed at the end of it. Like, I mean, people were, wow, thank you for doing this. This is such an amazing day. I can't believe how much I learned. And at the end of the day, I'm just kind of buzzing around like a little hummingbird because I'm so happy and jazzed up from all the energy that people are putting back at me, the positive energy. So yeah, it's amazing. So
I'm going to kind of role play, but I'm trying to think back through my own interactions with people or even things I've said myself. And how many times have I said or heard other people say, if only I had more time, or there's never enough time, or some variation of that. And why that might, while that might scare me or the particular business owner, other business owners, that might be like a really cool like opportunity for you.
When other people say that, that's when I step up to help. That's when the superhero comes to the rescue, right? People who say they don't have time or they're busy, they're too busy, they're stressed. Those are my people that I work with and help. Yes, because we all have the same number of hours in a day. We have the same number of hours as Bill Gates or whoever, you know, whatever successful person you look at. They just do something a little different with their day than what the average person does. So we've all got these 24 hours. I like to call them 24 golden coins. And you choose each day, how are you going to invest those coins? So are you going to invest them in four hours of Netflix? Or are you going to invest them in learning a new musical instrument or gaining a skill that can help you in your career? So how each day we make these choices and we don't realize we're making them because they happen by default. And so I help people understand that time is an investment. And of course, you, in your field, you know all about dealing with investments and properly handling the money. And people make the same mistakes with time that they do with money that you're very used to about the way that they invest it and the way they handle it. So,
and maybe I'm going on a limb here, perhaps even more mistakes with investing their time. Because I think investing with money is sort of, even if people don't do it, they know it's a thing, they think about it that way. But I don't know that a lot of people think about the using of their time as an investment. And I think even that one mind shift or perspective shift alone would probably pay dividends if you tried to think about, okay, I've got these 24 gold coins, as you call them. How am I going to invest them? And I like that you use 24 because, I mean, obviously there's 24 hours in a day, but people are like, well, I gotta sleep. But I mean, the emphasis that we place on sleep or how much sleep we do or don't get could also affect our productivity throughout the day too. And so I like how you use all 24 as an investment instead of just, well, you probably only wake for 12 to 16. So we'll just talk about that. So I'm excited to learn.
And sleep is an investment, you know, because that's where you recharge to get the energy for the rest of the day. So it's important to actually invest those in your sleep. And you were talking about it being more difficult. So when you have money issues or you're concerned about your money, you talk to an accountant, you talk to a financial planner. But when you're running out of time,
who do you talk to?
Who do you call? So that's the case where you should be talking to a productivity coach, a time management coach to help you understand where your time's going. So.
Now, I could be very naive, but I don't think I've run into another person who does what you do. Do you find that you're kind of a niche or that there's a lot of people that do what you do and maybe just package it differently?
It is a niche, but it's also, and I've deliberately chosen that niche. It could also be called business coaching or life coaching. You know, these overlap. I mean, many business and life coaches might touch on this as well. I deliberately chose the time management productivity in order to stand out. My unique selling proposition from a marketing perspective is that I do this. And I do some other business. I mean, most of my clients are small business owners. And years ago, I taught internet marketing. You picked up one of those from my website where the person talked about the e-business stuff that I've been teaching. But I decided to focus on the time management and productivity. But many of my clients, I'm helping them with other areas as well, such as where should they grow or what is their purpose with their business? What fits their mandate? Many people will have like four or five different business ideas all running, none of which are earning money yet. And I said, well, if we focused on the one, we could have that one, you know, up and running and earning income and then looking at the others. So yeah, you're right. It's kind of a niche, but it's a niche that's worked very well for me. So.
Oh yeah. Now, before we dive too much into the material, and I would like you to, I'd like to see where you want to take this. My wife may watch this podcast at some point, and my kids may watch this podcast at some point, and I've always had this debate. And if I'm the one that's wrong, you're going to tell me now, and I'm okay with that. But I've always felt the concept of multitasking wasn't an actual thing. Like, and my family will just say, well, your brain's not wired that way, but ours is. And I'm like, you might be right. I know for me, if I try to do multiple things at the same time, I might feel mildly successful, but I know I'll never do any one of them better than if I just focused on just the one thing. But from your perspective, and if this is a spoiler alert, we can visit it later on, is multitasking a thing?
Multitasking is a myth. So when we're multitasking, we're jumping from one thing to the other, and we're giving each little bits of microfocus. Like, we're not really fully focusing on it. And there's many people who are very good at multitasking. Women tend to be better at it than men.
Possibly, I'll explain it.
Could be possibly because of evolution. Men had to be quiet and out in the woods and very focused on the hunting. Women were in community listening for children who might need help. You know, so there's a very different, than it could be evolutionary, and I've read some things about that. But when science has done a number of studies on multitasking, so it's not just my word for it. So I can get you the studies if you need to back this
up. I might need it.
So what happens is they found people who were exceptional multitaskers, people who were brilliant at multitasking, people who were incredibly successful. Everybody would say they're successful, and they were multitasking all the time. And they looked at these people, and then they ran tests where they continued working the same way, and then they had tests where they made them focus. And in every case where they were made to focus, they got more done. They were more accomplished. So these people are successful in spite of multitasking, not because of it. And so that would be probably, as you say, your family is good at multitasking, but it's not getting that same level of focus, because whenever you're interrupted, it takes 20 to 30 minutes for your brain to get back to the same level of deep thought, of deep focus. Cal Newport calls it deep work. It takes 20 to 30 minutes to get back to that same level. So if you're interrupted 3 times an hour, 6 times an hour when you're working at a fraction of your total brain power. So, and most of us are working that way. We're really only working at a fraction of what we can do. When someone's calculating, a rocket scientist, when they're calculating trajectories to land something on Mars, they shouldn't be distracted. When we're driving a car, we shouldn't be distracted when we get tons of metal running down the road. When you're making major decisions about your business or planning or how you're going to approach a customer, you shouldn't be distracted.
Okay, so maybe one more spoiler alert, but you made me think of something else. And I've sometimes felt bad about this, but knowing how my own brain works, I've sort of kept doing it anyways. If I'm in the middle of working on a client's file or tax or year end or something, and then my receptionist will say, "Hey, Corey, you've got a phone call. Do you want to take it?" My instinct is to say, "No, but if you can take a message, I'll call them back when I'm done," because I'm thinking I don't want to interrupt myself. But at the same time, it's already, the interruption's kind of already happened then, because of, I'm not sure if I'm explaining myself well, but is it a good idea to try to like take messages and call people back in one kind of sitting, or is it an okay thing to be able to take calls in the middle of other work? I know you mentioned a moment ago that interruptions will kind of set you back the 20, 25 minutes. Do you have kind of a take on that?
So if we reframe that a bit, you're saying the interruptions already happened, so shouldn't I just take the call? From one perspective.
Okay? Sure.
But if we reframe that a bit, why are you getting interrupted with a phone call when you're in the middle of your most important project of the day, as an example? So this is where restructuring how that would work could change that entire thing, so you're not being interrupted. I might set aside maybe 1 or 2 hours a day where you don't get interrupted, period. I call it the power hour.
Okay.
So you have a power hour set aside, and all of your team is told, under no circumstances can I be interrupted. You can't walk in my office and ask me if I want to go to the ball game this weekend. You can't walk into my office and ask me if I've seen the stapler. Like, you can't, and phone calls get, everybody just takes a message during that 1 hour. And try that and see what the difference it makes. And then take your worst, nastiest, horrible project you really don't want to work on, that you're hard to focus on, like really difficult, and try that for 1 hour, and you'll be shocked at how much you get through in 1 hour of an uninterrupted time totally. Now, I'm not saying you can do it all day or you need to do this continuously, but for your toughest project, yeah, block it off and don't take an interruption, period, meaning nobody should walk into your office because you have a phone call. That's what voicemail's for. That's what your message board, you know, your message slots for, whatever, however you're taking messages. So.
Okay. No more spoiler alerts, I promise. Won't ask any more jump the gun questions. So almost everybody listening to this podcast, many of them are owning a small business or thinking about owning a business, or I don't think about everyone in general probably has time management things they'd love to improve on or challenges they face. Where do we start? How do you want to go about like tackling this concept of time management?
Ooh, so I would say some time ago, I was trying to, I would have people come up to me. So if you're a doctor and you're in your party, then somebody's going to pull open their shirt and say, "Hey, doc, what do you think of this lump?" Or if you're a lawyer at a party, someone's going to walk up to you and say, "Well, I'm going through this legal issue. Can you give me some help?" Right? Notwithstanding the fact that how many years of training do these people have, and they expect you just for free to talk to them on the spot. So as a time management coach at a party, I get asked, what's the one thing you can tell me that's going to make all the difference and solve all my problems now, right? And so part of me thinks, wow, this is horribly unfair. You know, I've been mastering this for 25 years. I get paid to do this. And this person, just in a little meeting we're at, a business meeting or a party or whatever, wants me to somehow give them all the knowledge in a minute, you know, like essentially an elevator speech, right? So part of me felt was really unfair. The other part of me that would watch their eyes and see how desperate they were for help said, challenge accepted. So I came up with a concept that I call the time management success formula that I could explain in a minute, but I could expand out to kind of endlessly to go deeper and deeper and help people.
Okay.
And this concept, I think, fits what you're talking about. So the very first part of the concept is start with the outcome in mind that you want to achieve. Because most of us just start working in the day and without choosing, it's like hopping into your car and driving without a destination in mind. You're you know, wear and tear in your car, spending lots of gas, racking up the miles or kilometers, but you're not getting anywhere because you haven't chosen the destination first. So in essence, you say, what is the outcome I want to achieve, whether it's business growth, whether it's, you know, coming up with a new product idea, like whatever it's going to be, choose that outcome first. So that's step one. Set the outcome, set the goals. The second step is to come up with a step-by-step plan on how to reach that outcome. So if you say, I want to write a book, you say, okay, you want to write a book, what would the steps be? So maybe you're going to decide on the book title, decide on the book topic, write the outline. So you can break this down into all these different tasks that make it simpler. Because if you just say, I have to write 35,000 words and you're sitting there at your computer going, ah, where's 35,000 words going to come from? It's much easier to say, how about I come up with a title first or come up with a topic or let's write an outline or let's write one character in the book or something like that. You can break all these down. So your step one is the outcome. Step two is the step-by-step plan to reach the outcome. And step three is dedicated time to perform those steps. And step three is the one most people miss because they've maybe got the goal in mind. Maybe they've even got some idea how to get there, the steps needed, but then they forget to do the blocks of time. So if you were to say the number one thing you want to do this year is get fit, and then at the end of the year, you haven't gone out and spent any hours on fitness, but I have all these great goals. Why aren't I fit? I set the goal. It's because you didn't do the dedicated time in that case. And that's true of anything. So in a nutshell, that's what I would say is start with the outcomes, because whatever you want to achieve, make sure you're working towards that. And most people, about half to three quarters of the work they're doing isn't towards any of the outcomes they tell me are their most important outcomes. And I say, why are you spending three quarters of your time on work that isn't towards any of your important outcomes?
And they might say something like low-hanging fruit or easy wins, or they may not say, but they're probably thinking, because the ones I really need to work on scare me or intimidate me or whatever.
And that's where the procrastination comes in. Scare me, don't know how to do it, or is another one. Like you're not quite sure what the next step is. So instead you go and work on something you already know. So those are all quite common. But again, if you've chosen the most important outcome, you've got the step-by-step on how to get there, and you've set that block of time aside only for that and cannot spend it on anything else. That time needs to be sacred time. So then it's much easier to do. In my case, I'm an entrepreneur. So if I don't market, I don't get paid. So if I get all these great client projects on the go and I'm happily working on them, and I come to the last client project and I go, where's the next? No next paycheck. And because there's no projects in the pipeline, right? So I spend 25% of my time every week on marketing, and I keep that time sacred. I will not let anything else, even large client projects that have come in, nothing else will get in the way of my marketing. For that reason, because that's where the next month's income comes from. That's where the ongoing income comes from. And that's what served me well. So if I were to just say, I don't really feel like doing the marketing this week, or I don't know how to market this week, that's not going to work. I need to either do it myself, learn it, or hire somebody to help. Like, there's multiple ways of dealing with it. If you're not quite sure or you're scared of it, you can get help. So.
That's interesting that you say that. I mean, it makes so much sense, but the three-step things that you mentioned, the last one, not actually scheduling in and blocking off for reserving time to do all these great things that you want to do. You mean like, well, that seems so common sense, but we don't think of it. At least I don't. I don't think a lot of people think of it that way. If someone comes up to you and or you hear someone say, Garland, I don't have enough time, or if only I had more time. In your like reworded idea, what are they actually saying? Because obviously they can't create more time. So what is it that they're actually saying?
They're saying I'm investing my time badly in many ways. They're not saying that. Also, many people feel out of control. They don't feel that the person making that choice, especially if they're an employee. Well, my boss controls my time. I can't make any of these techniques work because my boss will interrupt me. My boss will do this. My boss will do that. But there's tons of things you can do, even if you have a boss who isn't as thoughtful in these cases. There's still ways of working more efficiently yourself. There's automations you can do. They're working in time blocks, batching your time. There's tons of things you can do to be more efficient. So you do control more of your time than you think, even if you're an employee. And if you're an entrepreneur, you're controlling all of your time. But in many cases, we're working in our business, not on our business. So that's the mistake we make too. We're so busy working on that detailed work throughout the day that we're wasting a lot of that time. I would estimate, and I haven't looked at what you do in a day, so I'm not picking on you or anything.
No, pick away.
On average, my clients, when I sit down and look at the work they do in a day, 35 to 50% of the work they do should either not be done at all or shouldn't be done by them. So it's quite easy to find for most of my clients 2 or 3 hours a day in work just by changing some of the things. And I'll give you a good example of this. I have in the past owned a web design company, and I had up to 5 designers working for me. I suck at graphic design. You don't want me doing any graphics for you ever, but I had 5 very talented designers working for me. But I'm the marketing guy. I understand marketing. So I and the designers together do a better job than anyone else apart. Now, could I get better at design? Maybe. I'm sure I could take courses. I could get better. I could overcome my weakness in graphic design. But why should I when the things I'm good at, the marketing, the training, the teaching, the come up with products, those are the things that are bringing me the money. Why should I try to be a mediocre graphic designer? And I'll be honest, I would only ever be mediocre no matter how many courses I took. I just don't have that aesthetic touch. I know when one looks great, but I don't know how to do that myself. The websites I would do would be very basic. Similarly, you know, like if Wayne Gretzky had said, gee, I'm kind of weak in my tennis game, but I'm really good at hockey. I'm going to work on my tennis game and get better. And he wouldn't go into hockey. What a mess up that would have been, right? So be like Wayne Gretzky, focus on your superpower and go with that. So
is it fair to say then that one step people could take is sort of log how they spend their time in a day or whatever, and then identify which tasks or, as you said, ones they probably either shouldn't be doing at all or should be delegating to someone else?
Absolutely. And so I use time tracking, kind of like how the doctor uses the EKG to check your heart, your heart health. So I usually recommend people track their time for at least a week or two when we first get started to get a feel for where you're spending your tasks. And many of my clients will say, well, this doesn't take me much time. And then at the end of the tracking, we go, you told me it didn't take much time. That's 25% of your time. So you told me the number one most important thing to spend your time on was X, and you spent 2% of your week on it. So something's wrong here. So it's a great diagnostic tool to track your time. And there's tons of great free time trackers out there like Clockify or Toggle. There's lots of great ways to be able to track that so that you can see where your time is going. And then of course you take that to your time management coach, I can analyze that for you and give you some insights into what's happening. Another thing is every task that you have, you talked about, should you outsource it or should you delegate or something like that? Take every task you have in your task management system and your task list and before you work in the task, say, does this task need to be done at all? Like, does really, what if I stopped doing it? What if I dumped it? Or could I automate it? Or could I delegate this to somebody, a virtual assistant, a personal assistant, another office team member? And it makes a lot of sense. And you might find, again, 30 to 40% of that task you're doing could easily be done by somebody else, and sometimes better. Sometimes you have somebody in your office who's really good at that detail work, and you just pass that off to them and let them go crazy, you know, because they love that kind of thing. They thrive on it, right? And then you're free to do the visionary things, the big picture things, the things only you can do.
Yeah, thank you. I'd like to pat myself on the back a little bit, but I don't think I can pat it very hard. One of the things I made, changes I made a few months ago, was hiring an executive assistant. And my thought was, when I hired her, she's like, what do you want me to do? And I'm like, I don't fully know yet, but I know there's a lot of things I do that I don't need to be the one to do. And those are what I'm going to have you do. And so we're still trying to iron the details of that out. But so far, it's been like, how many things have I spent my time doing in the last 10 years that it really didn't need to be me the one that was doing it? But sometimes it's hard to take it to the next level. Some people might think that maybe they can't afford an executive assistant or to hire someone to do these tasks, which is maybe why they think they have to do them. How do you kind of address that concern?
And sometimes there's that chicken and the egg problem. If I had more money, I could hire an assistant to do all this work for me, and then I would be free to be marketing and bring in more money. But it seems like if you don't have the money, you can't do it. A great way to do it, and in your case, it makes sense. If you're an established company, you've got income coming in, to hire a full-time, you know, personal assistant, executive assistant, and have them do this work for you, because they're always there. You can pass it to them. What you can do as an interim is you can hire a virtual assistant for maybe 5 or 10 hours a week to start, and then pass them some of the work that way. So it's less expensive than hiring a full-time person. Also, it's less dramatic if you have to let somebody go. You just stop sending them hours. So it's not like you're having to lay somebody off or terminate them or something like that. So a virtual assistant's a great interim between having no help and then having a full-time assistant. So,
forgive my ignorance, but can you maybe walk us through how a virtual assistant works? Like, in my head, I'm thinking, well, is this somebody in local, or is this somebody in like another country? How do I control the quality of the work, or make sure they're actually, if I'm paying them by the hour, how do I know they spent that hour effectively? Like, how does the process of using a virtual assistant work?
So the answer is yes. They can be locally or they can be overseas. Different rates for different people, and different skill sets. And virtual assistant is such a broad field. There's so many different things they can do. They can do article writing. They can do simple graphics, data entry, client database management stuff. So there's so many different things they can do that it's important to find the ones that work. How do you trust them? Test them first, okay? So have them work on low privacy things that aren't that critical, and have them send you all the information first. So one of my virtual assistants, I have her create and schedule my social media for the next couple of months, but it's all in my scheduling program for my social media, so I can see it and approve it first. So nothing goes out without me approving it.
Okay.
So that's one example there. And testing, I run a virtual assistant agency as well called ChronoTask, because so many of my clients needed virtual assistants that I decided to sell. They kept stealing mine. I chat with a client during a coaching call. I'd say, you know, like, all this stuff could be done by a virtual assistant. And they'd look at me with these puppy dog eyes and they'd say, do you know a good one, Gar? I said, okay, here's my contact information for my virtual assistant. I'll introduce you. And then I go to my virtual assistant a month or two later and say, hey, I need an extra 20 hours next month. I'm doing a product launch. And they look at me and say, Garland, you gave me 4 clients. I'm booked. So I had to create my own agency in self-defense in this case. So what I do to test my virtual assistants is I have them only work on my website, my social media, my forms, anything I'm doing before they go out to work on any of my client stuff. So they've been tested for 3 to 6 months before they ever touch anything for a client in my case. So find those tasks in your organization that are not critical, where you're not really that concerned, test them first. And you know, one trick I have is hire 3 virtual assistants at once, give them all a task that should take 2 or 3 hours each, and turn them loose on it, and then ask them to send you the results after 2 hours. And Look at the three virtual assistants, take the one with the best results and give them more. So it's a really great way to test. It doesn't cost that much. If you're paying them, you know, I mean, overseas VAs might be $5 to $15 US an hour. Local VAs might be, you know, anywhere from, say, $25 to $40 an hour. So you're only, it's not that expensive to test all of them for 2 hours each, right? So.
And do you think any kind of business could benefit from a virtual assistant? Like, I'm thinking of like clients I have that's like a one person electrician or a one person plumber or whatever. Like, obviously they can't outsource or get a virtual assistant to do their plumbing work, but I'm guessing it's more administratively.
All the administrative work, marketing, social media, website updates, quotes, creating quotes for clients, following up on invoicing, accounts receivable. I mean, this is a big one. Many of these small businesses are too busy to follow up on the accounts receivable. The virtual assistant I was talking about, where my client basically stole her from me, in her first week, he's a psychiatrist with a, he set up a new practice, and he was a very busy psychiatrist. In her first week, she found over $4,000 US in medical billing that had been missed. So she paid for herself for the next few weeks, or next probably month or two, in her first week, just by finding that kind of stuff. So,
what sort of qualifications did you look at when you're considering hiring a virtual assistant? Or do you go based on like testimonials, or like, what's a good way to like, I know you said you're going to test them out anyways, but you don't want to waste your time testing someone that is not going to likely even have like the qualifications or whatever. Like, what do you look for?
I usually ask them for samples of their work. And if they tell me they have no samples, then I don't bother, you know, continuing, because any virtual assistant should be able to create some samples of their work within a few hours, right? If you say you're good at writing articles, well, where's the articles you've written? Oh, well, they're on a client website. They're private. I can't show you. Okay, well, why wouldn't you write a couple of other articles on your own and share them with me, just so that I could see how well you're writing? I once had a web designer wanting to work for me, and he said he had no sample websites to show me. You're a web designer. You can knock out a website in 2 to 4 hours. I mean, come on. Like, so that's the thing. I look, and then I don't really care about their resume, honestly. I don't care about their education. I really care about their output. If you're hiring a graphic designer, don't look at how many design schools they've been through and how many certifications they have. Look at their designs and see if they fit your style that you're looking for, right?
Makes sense. Okay. Thank you for walking me through that, because I've always been wearier, just the unknown of that has always kind of scared me a little bit. Something else that you've mentioned a little earlier was the concept of automation. How does someone bring automation into their business to help them with their time management?
So one of the tricks is to look at every task and just ask yourself the question, can this be automated? So look at the software you're using for the task and ask support, check documentation, see if there's any way this can be automated. There's also third-party tools you can use to automate, such as Zapier. Zapier is a tool that connects other tools together. So one example is I do a lot of business networking, so I get business cards all the time given to me. I don't want to type in all that information. Yes, I could send it to my virtual assistant, but you know, I would still have to scan it or email it to them or something. So instead, what I do is I take out my phone, I take a picture of the card, using an app that scans it, and then I use Zapier to put that into my CRM, and my customer relationship management system. So it's there in seconds, and I don't have to do anything else. So continually look for ways to automate. If you can't find a way to automate, ask a programmer, ask an automation specialist, and they can probably find a way to automate things. I also work a ton with checklists and templates. So if I ever write anything, I drop it into a template. So if somebody's asked me a question, chances are I'm going to get asked that question again. I never write anything twice. So if somebody says, Garland, what's your take on the Pomodoro technique? I can write that once and just insert it into the next email it asks me about that. And that way I don't have to write out again and again and again the same answer to the question. So work with templates, work with checklists. Checklists are a great way to automate things. Also a great way to train other people when you bring other people in. So,
well, and I don't know if this is the same thing, because it's what makes me think of, but it must be different. And I know you're big into this too, so I wanted to take a few minutes and talk about this, but the use of AI or artificial intelligence. I believe you talk about that as a, I don't know if it's a key part, but at least a part of one of the tools that you'll invite people to use. When I think of AI, being very new to it, being very much a novice to it, the only thing I can think of is, oh, that's ChatGPT. And I can ask it to do things, or I can ask it questions or say, I'm going into this situation, what would you recommend? And I thought that right there is cool enough. But how does, I'm sure you could like teach someone like me to like do millions of other things I've never even thought of with AI. But how does AI factor into time management from what you've seen?
So AI is a game changer. So AI, well, first off, the main type of AI most people are using is what's called generative. It creates things. So you ask it to write a letter for you. You can ask it to create a proposal for you. You can ask it to assemble a quote for you. All of these different things. You can ask it to brainstorm. You can say, what are some passive income streams for an accounting firm? And it will go out and find those and brainstorm some ideas for you. There's just anything you can think of. It's like my brainstorming partner because I work all alone as a solopreneur. So it's amazing to me because there's so many things. What's a good referral partner for a time management coach? How could a time management coach approach a financial planning firm to offer them time management training? Like, you know, so I ask all of these questions and in seconds, it gives me one there. I taught a workshop last week called the AI Advantage, Artificial Intelligence for Productivity. And one of the people in the room was a life celebrant. And so she said, well, helping people who instead of using maybe a church or something for a wedding or a funeral or something, they have, you know, they rent other space and they use a life celebrant to lead them through the through. Okay. And so she was saying, well, how could AI help me? And I said, write a marketing plan for a life celebrant. And it gave her like pages of like, here's your marketing plan right there in 30 seconds. And she's like, wow, I had no idea that AI could do that. So you could write a marketing plan for your firm, have it put together. And then you can, what most people miss, this is the pro tip with AI. So what most people miss is you don't have to take the first information that it gives back to you. So if you were to say, write a letter to a client or write a letter to approach these kinds of firms about a partnership. And you look at the letter and usually they come up good first time, they're professional, they're well-written. But then you can say, make it warmer, make it more dramatic, make it funnier. I do a lot of business networking, so I create my introductions using AI, you know, write it from the point of view of a superhero, Captain Time, going out here. And then I had one that had it rhyme. I said, write one that rhymes. And that was brilliant. And when I did that one at a networking event, people go, whoa, that's stunning, right?
You must have spent hours on that.
No, yeah, 30 seconds, right? So this is the thing is AI does in 30 seconds or a minute what might have, you know, and the output is really good and they often come up with concepts I hadn't thought of. Now I've written marketing plans and business plans for a living, right? So I do know how to do these without AI, but AI, it can build in my knowledge too. So I can say to AI, make sure you include these key components and it will include them, expand on them, and also add a whole bunch of its own that I might not have thought of. And it's just, it can create checklists for you. It can also do, they also have predictive aspects too, AI. So you could upload financial statements and say, analyze this financial statement for me. And I did that for my financial statements. I uploaded it to ChatGPT and had it analyze it. And so it told me my gross profit margin was good. And it told me that I was too reliant on one area of income. And you know, so it gave me some really good insights into my financial statements.
Sorry, you're kind of blowing my mind as we're talking right now. Like, in that situation, did you just upload PDFs or
PDF,
like,
yep.
And it reads that? Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I was like, that'd be kind of weird to copy and paste the information from it into a thing. But
yeah, so most AI will take information by a PDF. They can usually also take text. You can copy and paste. In addition, some AIs will grab current URLs. So if I say, write a proposal based on information on my website, it will do that. Or if I were to say to you, let's say I wanted to give you a quote on my virtual assistant agency doing your website, I can say, go to the Chill & Co.'s website and analyze it from a marketing perspective and suggest several improvements that it needs. And it would analyze that for me. And then I could add my own knowledge to that. And I could send you, hey, looking at your website, I see there's a few things that could be tweaked. Can we talk?
So you would just give it a link and it would do everything.
It will do all that work for you, yes.
This is kind of a question revealing how much I don't know about AI. Are all AIs the same and or like, let me try this again. Is there more than one artificial intelligence platform and are they all kind of equal?
There's tons of them out there and getting to be more all the time. And there's also specialty AIs, like there's AIs that are coming up from the medical field and for the legal field, which are trained especially in those fields with a deeper knowledge than say what GPT would have. And so when I was testing AIs, what I did was I pinned four of them to my browser so that they would all be there. And then I would run the same question through all four until I could figure out which one was giving me the best results for what I'm doing. And so some of them might have different strengths. Now, you might find especially in the financial field, you might find one of them is far better at the finances than other ones. Or you might find one of them is far better at the writing and sounding more human. Another thing I had ChatGPT do for me one time is I needed to do a demonstration of some software that was going to pull information from financial statements. I needed sample financial statements, so I had ChatGPT create sample financial statements for just a company, just demo ones. So, and it did that in seconds. So.
My goodness. You said that you pinned about four of them to your browser. Are these all ones that are like free subscription models, or do you pay for a subscription to some?
Most of them give you quite decent results for free. What I would do is use them. And then when you find your favorite ones you're using a lot, if you're hitting the limits where it says we've got too much traffic right now, come back later, then you would go ahead and upgrade in those particular ones. So.
Outside of ChatGPT, can you suggest some other ones for people to give a shot to or try?
Sure. So I really like Claude, Claude.ai. It is the most human sounding one for writing that I find. I really enjoy that. It seems to have the best results. Another one to try other than ChatGPT is Perplexity.ai. Perplexity is replacing Google search for me. So most of the searches we do when we're looking for an answer to a question, Google jams in all the ad stuff, then all the search engine optimized stuff, which often don't even answer your question. AI understands. I'll give you one really good example. If I was going to say, I'm looking for an alternative to QuickBooks, okay? What would happen is if I do that search in Google, what it will do is it will give me a whole bunch of QuickBooks tutorial, buy QuickBooks, QuickBooks sponsored training. It doesn't pick up that I said alternative to, which are the key words there. Perplexity picks up that I'm looking for alternatives to, and it would start to list, things like whatever they are, Freshdesk and Sage and whatever the other ones are, it would start to list them. And I can even ask for the pros and cons of each in that case. So that's an example of where AI is beating Google search. And it's interesting because years ago, Google search beat out old tools like InfoSeek and Ask Jeeves by giving you the best results. It's no longer giving you the best results compared to AI. So Perplexity is very good at writing, but what I love is it can go out in real time and grab URLs and real time information. Whereas Claude is trained, but it may not have the most recent information, like about the baseball scores last week. Whereas Perplexity can go out and get those in real time. And Perplexity can go up to my website and grab things in real time, or your website and analyze it and things like that.
So. And all those things you mentioned have versions of them that work quite well without any cost.
Yeah, all of them do. And ChatGPT, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, it's just, this was my results for questions I was asking, which is why I recommend people test two or three. I also use Copilot for pictures.
That's Bing's one, Microsoft's one.
Yeah, I use it for pictures, and it uses the DALL-E AI for pictures. So what I'll do is I'll say, okay, I'm doing a blog post about something or another, and then I give it the information, and it will create four pictures for me, and then I can download it and save it and add it to my blog. And it works brilliantly for creating images and pictures. I used to belong to a lot of stock photo sites. I paid a lot of money every month for stock photo sites. And they were okay, but a lot of people are using the same thing. Stock photos aren't good at metaphors. Like if you want to show, say, somebody tearing their hair out because they're stressed, do that search in stock photos. You might get some results. Hand that to AI and it'll create it for you.
And a custom one just
for you. Oh, yeah. Yeah, just for you, right? It'll look brilliant. And then you can say, make it in a cartoon version, make it in, you can do all these adjustments. And adjustments are the big thing with AI. Like, don't just take the first results, even if they're good, start to tweak it. In my case, for a lot of the marketing I do, people have met me. I'm very, as you read from the testimonials, I'm very clear. I'm very friendly. I'm very outgoing. So I don't write boring business type letters ever. So usually the first thing that comes out is kind of a little too boring for me, I say, well, add some emojis and make this warmer. And then it usually gets to sound like me. So
I'm just blown away right now. I have so many cool things I want to go try now.
Do you find... need to take a break so you can go try something?
Maybe. Do you find that you have to, I don't know, like fact check the AI that it's actually given you like proper answers or information? Is it, you find that there's errors sometimes?
Absolutely. Like us, AI has been known to take flights of fancy. And some law firms got in trouble because they were quoting case law that the AI made up. There were no precedents. It was not real case law. So it's very important to do the fact check. One of the things I like about Perplexity is Perplexity will put little numbers next to anything that's factual. And that way you can click on it and see where it got the information from.
Okay.
So it's got like built-in way for you to easily check facts. But I would never take a fact directly from AI. And I would test some things too. If it's running a calculation that's key for something financial, I would run it your normal way as well, just to make sure AI is giving you the right result on that. So
is part of the idea behind AI, and I just what you told me alone, I can see why you say it's a game changer, but you described a lot of it as generative AI. So I have a task that might take me as a human being or whatever, 2 or 3 hours, and I can give some parameters to my preferred AI platform and it can do it for me in a matter of a minute or two. Is that the main benefit of AI, or does it go beyond that?
That's one of the main benefits, the time. The other one is the brain power. It's like adding this, AI has been trained on the entire database of the internet, like all the knowledge in the internet. So imagine if you had all that knowledge in your head. Now you've got a partner in AI that has all that knowledge in their head and can bring that to whatever project you're working on together. So that's the other big thing is it's changed brainstorming entirely. You know, you and AI together can probably brainstorm more than, say, 5 people in your office. You know, AI will probably generate more things than the 5 people could come together. And if the 5 people plus AI get together in the office, real game changer, because then you can start to lead it and go, ask it this, ask, you know, and what about this? What if we also did that? And so you can build on each other, which is really brilliant. So it's like a partnership between AI and people. So
that's so cool. I didn't expect to spend so much of our podcast time today talking about it, but I can only imagine, like, I can't be the only one listening that will listen to this and be like, mind blown. I got so many cool things I could try to do and automate and just even just make better the brainstorming you said, or just the simplification stuff. So thank you for spending some time on that. I mean, I don't know if I'm just new to the game of this, but to me, this is somewhat of a fairly new approach and part of the process. What other tools do you have in your tool belt that you would recommend people try for time management?
First off, I'm really surprised at how many people don't have a dedicated task management system. To me, you can't run anything without a to-do list. Like, it's the most basic form of doing things. And most people, a lot of people don't have one, or it's built in as part of something else and maybe it's not very good. If you can't set a task, assign it to somebody, set a priority level, and then view the status of all of the tasks that are going on, like a dashboard for all the work in your office, then you're doing something wrong. And that's a tool, and many of us have it, you know, Outlook or Asana or Trello. I mean, there's many tools that will do this, but most of us are either not using them to their fullest or not using tasks at all. So a good task management system, along with training for your team and how to use it effectively, is critical.
I kind of want to go down a different avenue again, but I'm going to try to avoid it. I just, when you said Outlook, I'm like, well, yeah, I've used Outlook as a to-do list, but it's literally just, I need to do this and then I check it off when it's done. But what you're describing is task management, not just task listing.
Yeah. So for example, I think your executive assistant, how do you know what she's working on at any given time? I can pull up and see what all of my virtual assistants are doing. I can pull up all the tasks by who I've assigned them to. I can pull them all my tasks up by project. So if I want to see what's happening with the project where I'm going to be doing outreach corporate training, what's happening with the corporate training project? What are my team doing? I can see all that. Or if I'm going to meet with my virtual assistant manager that I do once a week, I can immediately pull up all the tasks assigned to him, all the tasks assigned to his subordinates, and I can go through them individually with him. And you should be able to do this in seconds, like to be able to pull this information up. So if you can't, then you need some training on your task management systems, or
to my list.
Yeah, maybe a dedicated task management system there. Also, it's a great way to assign tasks, because if you were to say to your executive assistant, can you get me this? Or can you research this? A good task management system makes you take that extra step to assign a due date, a priority level, and maybe some step-by-step instructions, which will give you better results. Once I made the mistake of assigning a task to my virtual assistant, and I had given her 10 hours a week of work, and I expected this task to take her 2 hours, so she'd still be working on my other task for 8 hours. She spent the whole 10 hours on that one task because I didn't make it clear what the estimated time was, what the level of that I was. She just went to work on it, right? So that's the clarity that a task management system and best practices around a task management system will bring. So,
and I know you alluded to a few, but do you have a favorite that you found?
There's no one favorite. A lot of it, when I work with my clients, first off, I don't push them into any one back of the room system. So I don't have a $3,000 system to sell all your listeners here today, back of the room, that I'm going to pitch to anybody, because there's tons of great ones out there that are good. It's just a case of learning how to use them. If a person's very visual, then a Kanban system is quite commonly used, like Trello or other ones like that, because you can take the cards and pull them across from lists. So that's quite useful. If you're more of a list person, like a list-based person, you probably prefer to view them as a list. So then there's tons of ones out there too. Microsoft To-Do's decent. Outlook can do the job. I mentioned Asana. So I don't have a favorite. It's kind of what I set up for everybody. Everybody's different. Zenkit to do is one I really like the look of, and it's I love the little sound. It gives me a little ding every time I take off a task. Little dopamine hit up there. Oh, ding ding. And then when I finish all my today work, it says you're all done for the day. And I love that.
That must feel good.
Well, the cool thing is here's the problem. If you've got 100 tasks to do this month and you look at a list of 100 tasks, how do you feel?
Like, overwhelmed.
This morning you've got 100 tasks in your list. That's like, it's crazy. So this is where the views come in. So instead, if you say, I'm going to work on the marketing now for the next hour, and maybe marketing only had 15 tasks. Well, that's less overwhelming, right? Or maybe I'm only going to look at the task due today. Maybe there's only 10. Well, suddenly it becomes much easier to do. So viewing by project, viewing by due today, viewing by the person you've assigned them to, views are really critical for task management. They're like the major way to stop looking at all the hundreds of tasks you might have in your organization at once.
So two more questions on this one. If a business owner, which happens a lot, is kind of on their own, they don't have anyone else, obviously they're assigning tasks to themselves. I mean, I know we've talked about virtual assistants and stuff, but if they haven't got to that point yet, there's no one else to assign these tasks to. And then how do they know for sure this task should be taking me 2 hours, this task should be taking me 10 minutes? Like, how would people fill in those gaps?
So first off, I do still think a virtual assistant's a great way to start, like to move some of those tasks over to somebody else. But yes, if they're brand new, no income yet, and it's all gotta be done by themselves, the benefit of the task management system is it will show the priority levels. And it's going to, and again, I talked in the time management success formula, setting up your outcomes and goals first. You can do that with your task management system too, by tying it to those outcomes and goals. Okay. So therefore you say, I'm going to spend 1 hour on new product development this morning. And under your new product development list, you have a list of all the tasks to do. Like, consider these five, you know, do research on these five potential ideas to see which one is best, you know, like that, to research the target audiences for these five potential new products. So it's much easier when you're doing the view, you're only looking at one project at a time and all your tasks are set up in priority sequence. So I never decide, what am I doing this morning? Because it's already been set up in my task management system by priority level, by objectives, by project. So I just start in, it's marketing time. What's my number one task for marketing? Finish it, knock it off. Number two, number three. Oh, my hour's up. Go on to my next one, which is new product development. So I'm never deciding what to do, because the moment you go, should I work on this? Should I work on this? Next thing you know, 20 minutes later, you haven't worked on one task. And some tasks only take 5 minutes. In 20 minutes, you might be able to knock off 5 or 6 tasks, right? So all that time you've wasted, maybe I'll work on this, or maybe I'll check do an email first. And you're not focused. You're not working on the most important tasks first. Have you ever gone to a grocery store for two things, maybe milk and bread.
Come up with
some. Walk through the whole store, come up with two bags of groceries and no milk and bread, because it's all those shiny things on the side that draw you in. Our work is the same way. If milk and bread are the two things you need to get done today, go and get the milk, go get the bread first, then shop the store. That way you're always going to do it. Similarly, if you say there's two most important things I've got to get done today, I've got to get this done for this client, I've got to order those business cards because I'm going to a networking thing in 2 weeks and I need it. Do those two first, because they were the most important thing. Nothing else you have is more important because you decided that.
So maybe this answers that question. And I know we talked about the P word earlier, but procrastination has got to be a death blow to a lot of people's productivity. How do you overcome that?
So there's multiple reasons for procrastination. So a lot of it, you got to dig in and say, why am I procrastinating on this? So one reason could be maybe you don't have the skill. So, you know, maybe it's not something you're good at. Maybe it involves programming or graphic design like I suck at or something like that. So then you have to say, well, maybe I'll just hire that out. I'll outsource that one part. Okay. So if it's something you don't know how to do, or you say, okay, I'm gonna start by watching a YouTube video on how to do this. I had a client gifted me a sockeye salmon one time, but it wasn't filleted. It was, you know, and I hadn't cleaned a fish in 25 years. I had no idea how to do it. So I called up a YouTube video. So there's YouTube videos for everything. And I managed to muddle my way through cleaning these two fish with a YouTube video on a picnic bench. So that would be, you know, either you're going to learn it or you're going to outsource it or something, or you're going to spend time, you know, to get through it. So that would be one thing there. I don't know how to do it. Another one is scared. And scared could be, why am I scared? Because maybe it's public speaking. Maybe you've been asked to do a 10-minute presentation for your networking group and you're terrified of public speaking. So instead, maybe start to brainstorm, what would be a really good topic? What would be interesting? Get AI to brainstorm a topic. Get AI to write it for you. And then practice it, you know, like, and again, set aside that time first thing in the morning. Brian Tracy calls this eat the frog first. Mm. Always do the thing you hate to do first thing in the morning. Go, you know, and just do that dedicated time. And this is the key thing. For most of us, and not all of us, but for most of us, early morning is when our energy levels are at the highest and our discipline levels are at the highest. That's the best time to work on the procrastination stuff that you're stuck at. Don't wait till 3 p.m. because you're going to find a way to procrastinate until the next day again. So that would be the key thing is go ahead and work with your energy levels and the discipline first thing in the morning. Hit that nasty thing first thing in the morning. Other reasons you might procrastinate. Maybe you're not that committed that you should really be doing this. So then you have to say, well, what outcome is this towards? Tying work to outcomes helps. Because if you wanted to write that book and that's really important to you, then you kind of get past the writer's block. I think Stephen King, I can't remember exactly how he worded it, but he said something like, amateurs wait for inspiration, like, you know, professional writers who get paid, they sit and write. You get your derriere in the seat and write, right? And that's what we sometimes are waiting for inspiration or something else. No, instead, an inspiration can often be sparked with AI. So yeah, there's tons of different reasons, emotional and these kinds of things. You dig into what they are. Dedicated time helps. Dedicated time during the best times, you know, your most highest brain power time in the morning is usually a good way to tackle those.
Yeah, I think I'm probably the same way. Now, someone that would say that they're not a morning person, you would still probably argue that more than likely that's still probably their more productive time?
It might be, but you check their energy levels. You know, maybe have them test themselves multiple times throughout the day as far as ask them what their energy levels are like. I do know people who are night owls who, at, you know, maybe midnight is their peak time. And that's fine if you're working like a web designer, a graphic designer, a programmer, somewhere where you're not on site, where you have to meet clients or things like that, right? Or having to work in a normal office space. And nothing wrong with that. So again, and that's why I said it's not absolutely everybody that has that, but I would say, yeah, check that and find out when you're feeling your best energy times. Maybe every hour, set a timer and, you know, just on a scale of 1 to 5, what's my energy level like? What's my brain power level feeling like? And just tick that throughout the day, try it for a week or two. You get a good feel for when your best times are.
I like that. Focusing more on when your energy levels I like that.
For me, it's first thing in the morning. I usually, within the first 2 hours of work in the morning, I've got most of the important things done in the day. And then I save the afternoon for the easy stuff. Email. I do email in the afternoon because email is easy. Coaching. I love coaching. It's natural for me. I do that in the afternoon. Creating workshops, you know, outlines, afternoon work. But the morning is when I do my biggest brain power, the things that really require thought.
And I guess that might also give you a really cool sense of accomplishment early on.
You know, if you're by noon, if you're, you've already accomplished the major stuff, you can kind of relax the rest of the day. I mean, you're still working, but you can relax and it's not looming over you, that horrible thing you're waiting to. One time I had a business plan I had to write for a client, and honestly, I couldn't connect to her product. Like I had real trouble connecting with it and inspiration did not come. But I knew this about myself. So I set the first hour every day, had to work on her project, set a timer for an hour, and I worked on her project. After 3 or 4 days, it started to flow. Like it came, the first few days were tough. It started to flow. And after that, more and more ideas generated. Also, when you start a project like that, your mental back burner starts working. So I'd be out for a walk with my dogs and I'd start to, I should add this. And I'd take notes on my phone while I'm out. So the ideas kept coming, right? And I finished the project two weeks early. After this horrible, nasty project, I couldn't think I would do. Another example is one time I was having high anxiety over a task I hadn't gotten to. Every day I said, I got to do this. 2-3 weeks later, I finally got to it and I did it and it took me 15 bloody minutes. And I was, don't use bad words on podcast, but I was really mad at myself, right? Because I've been in agony for weeks and anxious over a stupid task I could have knocked off in 15 minutes anytime in the past 2 or 3 weeks. So that's an example of where I should have just set it as a priority if it was bothering me and just knocked it off and did it. So
I want to ask you, I know we've kind of been here for a while, but I got a couple of things I want to ask you before we end. When I think of like managing my day, and I don't know if the listeners will be in the same boat, we talked a little bit about this earlier, but I mostly think of managing my work day. I'm at work from proverbially 9 to 5. How can I make the most of those 8 hours? But you talked earlier about managing all 24 hours in a day. Do you find that you still use your task management kind of idea in the non-work hours of your day?
Absolutely. Now, some people feel that planning your day too much, especially the personal time, is getting too anal retentive and no fun and that kind of thing. And truthfully, planning your evening and planning your off time is great fun. So and can help you achieve the things you want to achieve. So for example, if you felt fitness was going to be really important, have a set time every night that you go to the fitness center, maybe from 7 till 8 or something, and have that set. And that way you'll do it. It's a habit and you're going to go all the time. My wife and I schedule date nights and adventure days. And there's kind of anticipation. Oh, you know, Saturday's adventure day. What are we going to do? You know, road trip. So it's fun to do those. So instead of having it scheduled like that, I mean, that doesn't keep us from being spontaneous. We can still do the same thing and just pick a day and do that. But scheduling things ahead really does help that way. You can also tie personal time habits to something else. One of my tricks is to tie exercise for me to happen right after my supper. So the moment I've done my supper, I don't even put the dishes away. I go and do 20 minutes of exercise first before I come back and do the dishes. And by tying it to that, it makes me do it. So that's called habit stacking.
I was going to say, that reminds me of James Clear's book.
Yes, yes. Atomic Habits is a brilliant book. Highly recommended to everybody. It's a great read. And his comment is like small habits, kind of like atoms. You know, splitting atoms has a big impact and small habits have that kind of a level of impact too. Something as simple as I used to go for a 20-minute walk every day at lunch had a huge impact on my afternoons. Another thing I often recommend is take a break during your lunch, exercise, move around a bit, get outside in the fresh air, and then come back in, and you'll be surprised that you're usually that lagging you do about 3 o'clock, no matter how much coffee you've had, you know, it'll be much less, and you'll be able to get a lot more done in the afternoon. So yeah, habits are a great way to build on these things, both personal and work.
So you mentioned James Clear's book, The Atomic Habits, as a highly recommended read. What other books or reference material would you recommend people check out?
I like the Checklist Manifesto by Dr. Atul Gawande. First off, because I'm a checklist geek and I'm checklist king. So whenever I start a new task I've never done before, I start with a checklist because that helps keep me on track. And if you've ever gone camping with a can soup, can stew or whatever, and got there without a can opener, you know the importance of having a checklist. And it's a really good book about the importance of checklists. Dr. Gawande in his book created a surgical checklist that could be used in 90 seconds by any surgical team, and it reduced deaths and complications by over 35%, not only in modern hospital surgical suites, but also in third world country surgical suites where there's a lot more issues and things like that. So what a huge impact. And his second comment that I talked was the B-17 bomber, which was deemed by too difficult to fly because every pilot who tried to fly it, it crashed, they couldn't fly it. And they solved it with having these very elaborate checklists that had them go through all these things to make sure the flaps were in the proper place and everything before they took off. So that's two examples of where checklists had a huge impact in that case. And I'm surprised more people aren't using checklists and templates for their tasks. Another one, Deep Work by Cal Newport is quite good as well. So he just talks about what I've talked about, needing that deep focus level instead of doing the multitasking. So that's really what that one's about. I mean, there's tons of good ones out there. The Pomodoro technique is a good technique. You don't necessarily need a whole book on it, I don't think. But it's setting a timer for 25 minutes and then taking a 5-minute break is the gist of it. There's more to it than that. But I work with focus timers quite often. I tend to call them focus timers. They've been around for a long time, even before the Pomodoro technique author did this. So it's not necessarily a new thing, but he did really help make them more common and more well-known. And setting a timer helps create the focus, because if you know your timer's running, you say, oh, I'm not supposed to be watching funny cat videos on YouTube. I'm supposed to be focusing on this marketing project for 30 minutes or this client project for 25 or 30 minutes. So yeah, that's another good technique as well. So
wonderful. It has been a wonderful day with you here. I appreciate you sharing with us. Like I said, my mind's been blown on multiple occasions, and I got okay, I'm gonna got so many cool things I want to try after this. Any kind of final thoughts? If people didn't get anything else out of what we talked about today, what are kind of your main things that you want to make sure they caught or that they take home with them?
Stop saying you don't have time, because you're creating that saying you don't have time. Instead, say the choices I've made have led me to not being able to finish the things I want to do. Tomorrow I will make different choices. What choices will I make? So the choice is yours, how you're spending your time, where you choose to invest it. So take responsibility for it. Take control of your own time. And yes, I know people who say that my boss controls my time. Within that, there's still tons of things, because your boss isn't watching you every second. You choose which project to work on first. You choose which task to work on first. So make sure that you're investing those hours wisely. That would be probably the biggest one. And always connect the work you're doing to the outcome that you're trying to achieve. That would be the other big thing, I would say. So
wonderful. We mentioned this earlier. You've written a book, possibly more than one, but at least one. How do people go about getting a copy if they're interested in this?
Sure. Stop Wasting Time and Procrastination in 5 Weeks is on Amazon. So you can have a look there. Or, of course, come to CaptainTime.com website and reach out, and we'll be happy to send you links or get you a copy that way. So
wonderful. Well, thank you again, Garland, for being here. I'm curious, how many people call you Captain Time versus Garland?
So one of my coaching clients always, whenever he'd see me on Zoom, he'd say, oh, Captain, my Captain. So a lot of people call me Captain Time. It's people really have fun with it, referring me to other people that way. And the jokes are always really fun. When I'm at the business networking events and they're timing things like 40-second introductions or timing, short meetings, it's like, well, we have to be on time because Captain Time's here today, right? So it's really become a and these are like my extended business family, the networking people. So of course we all have fun and they joke and laugh with me all the time. But yes, it's been a real fun persona to have the hat and the superhero aspect of it. It's been really great for branding my business. I highly recommend you find a cool hat for your business. It's a really great way to to be different and out there. And personally, Nothing to do with time management. I just think more people should wear hats. I think hats can be really cool, right? So finding those cool hats that fit you, it's a great way to you know, make yourself unusual, different, and stand out. So
wonderful. Well, I want to thank Garland Colson, aka Captain Time, for joining us on our podcast today. This has been another episode of the Business Speak podcast. Thanks for joining, everyone.
Thanks so much for having me, Corey.
You've been listening to the Business Speak podcast featuring Mr. Chill. Be sure to subscribe and add us to your podcast library to ensure you never miss an episode. We love hearing from our listeners. If you have a topic or question you'd like us to discuss, would like to be a guest on our show, or would otherwise like to get in touch with us, please visit our website at businessspeak.ca. Thanks for listening to Business Speak, the language of business simplified.